Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Behind Love's Walls by Carrie Fancett Pagels. Two successful women, 125 years apart, build walls to protect their hearts. Modern-day Willa, a successful interior decorator, is chosen to consult for the Grand Hotel's possible redesign. She discovers a journal detailing the struggles of a young woman, Lily, which reveals dark secrets. The renowned singer wasn't who she pretended to be. As Willa reaches out to Lily's descendant, a charismatic and prominent landscape artist, she lets down her guard. Should she share the journal with him, or once again erect a wall as she struggles to redesign both the Grand and her life?
Hi, and welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm Sarah Hemmerker and your host. Thank you for joining me. Today, I'm talking with Carrie Fancett Pagels. She is the award-winning author of more than 20 Christian fiction books, and we're going to talk about one of her latest, Behind Love's Wall. Welcome, Carrie.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. And it's Pagels.
Sorry, I meant to ask before we started, but Pagels. All right, everyone know Pagels. You just knew how to spell it and Google it and buy her books. So that's what you really need to know. So we were talking before we started the recording, Carrie, a little bit about how this book is kind of a dual time romantic suspense mystery book. So how, I mean, that's a lot of genres all mashed together. So how on earth did you navigate that as a writer?
Oh, I have to say, Sarah, that this is the hardest book that I had ever written. And not only that, but I had to have this done for Barber in under 6 months. So the first part of the story, I had a historical already half written, and it was part of a trio of historical romances that I had pitched to Barber, and they'd already published one full novel. And then the second one had been made that was My Heart Belongs on Mackinac Island. And that was a Maggie Award winner. And that book still sells up in Mackinac Island. I do a lot of book signings up there in the summer. But I had a second book that was a novella, part of a collection that I just got rights back to. That'll re-release this spring in a full novel. And that was his anchor. And then I had Lily's story. And so Lily Swain was a character who she's the songbird of Kentucky. And she has a problem because her mother has become notorious. And that story, her mother basically is believed to have been responsible for burning down an asylum in Kentucky, a psychiatric asylum. And so that story and Lily had been with me for years. And I had determined that since it hadn't been picked up, that the book that I would write in 2022, I was going to do it as an indie. And so I was approached by my agent, and she said, hey, Barber is doing dual timeline. I had just had a contemporary women's fiction come out, Butterfly Cottage, which released late last spring. And that was contemporary. And so I was kind of in that mode of having done a contemporary. And she said, it's got to be dual timeline, and there has to be a mystery in it. There has to be some kind of suspenseful mystery in it. And it has to be set at a location that is considered like a national landmark. So because I had Lily, you know, in my mind, that's the only book I really, really, really wanted to work on. And I'd already just done a contemporary that I was selling up on Mackinac Island. I prayed about that because I knew that was going to be, you know, a difficult situation. But I had just heard about, part of the inspiration for the contemporary was, I just heard that on Mackinac Island, the Grand Hotel, which is where Lily's story was set, I'd heard they had been sued. And the owners and then the previous owners, they had just sold the hotel to a national group, an international group. And the international group, I believe, also was sued. And so that was on my mind because it was like a huge thing. Mackinac Island, for them to have their prestigious Grand Hotel, a national landmark, to be sold. And then the designer there, Carlton Varney, had been there a long time, just a very famous designer, but, you know, older. And he sued for ageism, and he, because they went with a younger designer on the on some of the redesign. He'd been there a long time, designer under contract, and he sued because he had his personal belongings on his most recent, just a couple years ago, he had done a big design on these new builds on top of the Grand, these beautiful right. suites. So that was the thing that was in my mind. And I went with, I thought, well, a contemporary thing that could work is, why not have the contemporary gal have my heroine be an interior decorator, a designer, a resort designer. But that doesn't really finish your question. So your question is, so now I have a historical, I have a contemporary, and then what's the mystery? Well, my husband and I, we watch mystery shows a minimum of 5 nights a week. So that's not my normal genre. I do have a previous novel, Saving the Marquise's Granddaughter, that it was a suspenseful historical romance. But I normally have published, this was my 23rd book, published book, but I normally publish Christian historical romance until my recent contemporary women's fiction. But I thought, well, what I love to watch and is mystery shows. And so for me to come up with the mystery in this, it had to overlap, Sarah. It couldn't be, that was like, how do you get a mystery that starts? So I had to add an entire subplot line that could carry over both aspects from the historical to the present. And I had to weave that through. And so for me, I had a character, I don't want to do spoilers, but I had a character who I added, who I knew right off the get-go, she was a liar. And I'm like, she's it. And I knew she was going to be a big part of, she was the key element. And then I had to figure out, how does she play out in the future? Where, how does that from the past affect the future? But I don't write like a thin plot. I regardless of how I do my stories, I have a lot of layers, and I wanted someone who did tie into a contemporary problem we had. And there is a contemporary crime problem we have. If I say what it is, it's a spoiler.
Don't give it away.
Yeah. So I thought, it's really sad, but this thing we have going on, it is not new. This was going on back then. Not only that, but my great-grandfather lived and was a lumberjack in the area where some of the most notorious examples of this crime were going on. And so I took, you know, from what I knew about that, and I had characters who, when I absolutely do not like a story where I've figured it out. Who does? Who wants to watch a story and you figured it out? Like in the first, I wanted it to right up till the end. And so I had another character, like her counterfoil, the mystery ladies, Connerfoil. Mm-hmm. I had somebody who really until the last two chapters, and it, thankfully in the reviews, that's what people are saying too, is that they really had no idea until the end. I have that where it gets wrapped up where the reader's going, you've got to be kidding me. That's oh my gosh, that's what you want to have happen. And when I watch a story like that or read a book like that, that's what I want.
Right. And I think that's one of the challenges of writing romantic suspense or any kind of suspense or mystery story, is that you want to be fair to the reader. So you want to give them a chance to figure it out, or at least have some sort of inkling of how all these things are going to tie together, or, you know, not be totally surprised, because the opposite is you don't want them to guess in chapter two. Oh, wow. It's the butler, right?
Yeah.
The butler who did it, and everyone knows this because you just kind of like late, but you also don't want to get to the end and have it be something that came completely out of nowhere, had no inkling or anything at all. Or if there was a hint, there was so subtle that nobody picked, you know, you don't want that. You don't want it to feel right. Like, oh my goodness, this is like, they just like threw it in there because they couldn't figure out how to make it work, kind of a thing. Cause we've all seen shows like that and or read books like that, unfortunately. Where you go
plot hole.
Yes. Yeah. I remember reading one book and I was like into it. It was good. And then all of a sudden that like they wrapped it all. I'm thinking that was the solution. That didn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It thankfully that's pretty rare that you see that. You kind of wonder if the person's gotten to the end and they're going, well, I couldn't even really figure it out myself. So this is the way it's going to go.
right. Exactly. So that's how it can happen sometimes. So thank goodness that, you know, I hope that my books too, you know, because I want to layer that suspense in there, and that, you know, who's the bad guy? Why are they doing it? And you start revealing it as it goes along. So do you plot your novels out then? Are you a plotter?
I do normally plot my novels out normally. Okay. Uh-huh. And so with this one, I did also, and especially the back and forth part.
Yeah.
And then I have an excellent critique partner, Kathleen Maher, also a multi-published award-winning author. She does historical romance, but she, Kathy, she's more of a pantser, but she's also a good plotter. My husband and son are brainstorming partners. My son's also a writer, and he will drop everything and help me if I've got a plot line problem. And he was with me in Mackinac when I was plotting up the mostly contemporary part of this. And I complicate everything. So I have everything really thick, not a thin blot. And so I, not satisfied with one mystery, I had to add an entire another mystery line.
Yeah, so sometimes we're our own worst enemies when it comes to thinking of things.
So when I plotted the contemporary gal, she, you know, I write in character. And I write in character and I plot pretty much in character. And my heroine, the contemporary one, was insistent on this plot line with her mother and her father. I was a psychologist for 25 years. So I'm not crazy when I'm in character, but as a psychologist for 25 years, I teach on why backstory matters. And right. So for this character, she had been adopted by another family member. And I've had so many cases over the year and I've had friends too, where they've been adopted, but the people that adopted wanted them just to basically forget about the first few years. You know, that was their way of coping, you know, denial, just like the COVID deniers, where it's like, COVID's done, it's gone. You know, there's a lot of people you talk to and they're like, yeah, during COVID or when we had COVID, and you're like, hang on here a second, yeah. Girl. but you have people who they do the adoption and they totally want the person to just get on board with the new life. And of course, we know how that works out. Not too good. I even grew up with somebody who had been lied to her first, 16 years and wasn't told until she was a teenager who her actual birth mother was another family member. And then half the people in town knew.
Yeah.
They know, but she didn't know in this small town in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. That did not work out so good. So anyway, my character, she has the mystery of who her, the mystery of recollecting about her mother and what happened when her mother died, and then the mystery of who her father is. And so I used that aspect of who her father was to tie in with that other, the murder mystery part that carried over from the historical time.
Right. Yeah. Well, good. I mean, it sounds, I love that we're able to, play with history in a way, and that, to go down the past. I'm currently working on a trilogy, the last book in a trilogy, where the origins of the mystery, it's not a time slip, so we don't go back too much, happened in 1980s East Berlin. And so which I hope to indie publish this year. So I love playing with like the past, what happens in the past, does have impacts on the future. Like you're talking about, just who our parents are, if we're adopted, or even just larger things, things people do, they have that ripple effect. And I think that's, we see this all the time in just, read your newspaper.
Oh yeah.
There's always at least one story, I think, in every newspaper that has its ties back in the past. So I think it's fascinating that we can use that as writers to, just to make our stories more interesting.
I will say I understand when certain authors who that's all they write is going to be suspense and mainly contemporary. I do understand though why some don't want to look at that, like because if you've got that type of thing where it's just action and you want to keep them right now and you don't want to let go of the reader.
Right.
Tina Radcliffe Russo, she had talked to ACFW Virginia, which you and I belong to. Mm-hmm. She had spoken with us and she was not a fan of bringing in too much backstory. So I do understand that. However, that's not the way I write. And as a psychologist, the people that come through the office, basically, I can't say that there would have been even one person that there wasn't something, that from the past that was impacting the current situation.
Well, I could talk longer, Carrie, but unfortunately we are out of time. So thank you so much for being on my show.
Thanks so much for having me, Sarah. And sorry, I went on and on.
No, it's all good. So you've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm Sarah Hammerker, your host, and I've been talking with Carrie Fancett Pagels. Did I get it right?
Pagels.
today. So stay tuned for an excerpt from her book, Behind Love's Wall. Thank you for joining us.
Now an excerpt from Behind Love's Walls by Carrie Fancett Pagels. Outside Detroit, mid-June 1895. A hatchet, a Bible, and a revolver were Lily's best friends, and Cousin Clem next door with his shotgun. She eyed the flimsy wood-paneled door of the dank room over the tavern. The music hall job was supposed to be her venue for the entire summer. Indeed, it was popular as the proprietor had advertised, but in all the wrong ways and for rough clientele. And this was no opera house as indicated in the ad, as was clear from some of the obscene lyrics being belted out by the buxom redhead downstairs. Off-tune soprano notes pierced the thin floorboards beneath Lily's feet, and she shivered. She shimmied a rickety chair beneath the black metal doorknob. This was definitely not how she imagined her new singing job would turn out. She wouldn't let fear continue to run her life, though, now that she'd traveled so far.
God, I don't know why you allowed this. What are we gonna do?
Lily slipped to the floor and knelt on the worn rag rug that covered the wide pine floorboards. Downstairs, the hooting and hollering of patrons escalated. What elicited such a response? She drew in a deep breath, rose, and stepped toward the water basin set in a wobbly oak stand. Lily poured the cool water into the bowl and dipped the dingy washcloth into the water. She'd pulled a new soap cake from her travel case earlier. She ran the wet cloth over the lye soap that she and Mama had made together. She shivered as she washed her face, inhaling the pungent scent. Mama was gone, and in the wake of her misdeeds, she'd driven Lily and Clem far from their Appalachian mountain homes. As catcalls continued to ensue from downstairs, every nerve stood on edge. Fear had followed her all the way from the Kentucky mountains. Might not be any sleep until all the revelers at the inn were gone home. Lily closed her eyes as she began to unbutton her blouse to get ready for bed.
Lord, keep me safe.
She dropped her hand and patted the sheathed knife in her pocket.
And guide me in your plan.
Escape was the word that came to mind. Or was it a word from him? Next door, Clem's snores marked him as sleeping. Heavy footfall rambled up the stairs outside her room. A knock at the door startled her. She rebuttoned her shirt.
Who's there?
Miss Jones?
With her fatigue, Lily wasn't sure who Mr. Bly was asking for. Jones. Yes, that was the name she was using right now. Lily Jones, not Kerchinsky.
What do you need?
Thought we'd review the terms of your contract.
An undeniable slur marked the manager's words as liquor tainted. Songbird of Kentucky, she'd been called. Sang at the governor's mansion, even. With her mother's terrible action, Lily could rightly be called a tavern singer now that she and Clem had performed here. That was unacceptable. The door rattled and Lily stiffened. In three steps, Lily grabbed her pistol in her right hand and positioned her hatchet on the bed. The knife in her pocket would be a last resort.
Lord God, don't make me have to use these weapons.
Growing up in Appalachia, pretty much any uninvited person arriving at the door would have met the same welcoming committee from her parents as she now had with her. She strained to listen for Clem. The doorknob rattled again, and she shook but took aim at the door.
I will speak to you in the morning, Mr. Bly.
Not a chance. She and Clem needed to leave this place.
Well, Miss Jones, there's a few things I need to make clear about expectations.
He hiccuped. The door rattled violently, but the chair held firm.
Clem!
She called out. Lily drew in a steadying breath, aiming at the center of the doorway. Surely if the man made it through and he saw the gun, he'd stop. At least that was what Pa had always counted on when he'd sent them on the road. Where was her cousin? Through the thin walls, she heard Clem's bed creak. She held her breath as she heard his door open.
What the?
Mr. Bly let loose a string of profanities.
Put that gun away, Mr. Jones!
Although they had run-ins in the past, Clem had never actually had to threaten someone with a weapon.
You get your sorry self right back downstairs so I don't get tempted to use my fists on you.
At 6'1" and 220 pounds of mountain muscle, Clem Christie hadn't lost a tussle yet. She cringed, for she knew what this meant for them.
If that's how things are going to be, then you too can pack up and leave right now.
Mr. Bly sounded a little more alert now.
You get us our pay and we'll head out of here in the morning. Have it your way, you backwoods imbecile.
How dare he insult Clem like that? Bly's heavy footsteps headed away.
You all right, Lil?
Clem called through the door. She exhaled in relief, her heart pounding.
Yes.
She allowed him in, surprised to see Clem still dressed.
I thought you were asleep.
I was, but from the way that vermin was eyeing you during our performance, I kept myself propped up in bed. But I fell asleep. Sorry, Lil.
Thanks for being there for me.
But now we've got to move on again.
He stretched his arms wide like he did after a performance to ease his shoulders.
I'll pack my things and you do the same.
We can't catch a train till morning, Lil.
Right.
And it wasn't safe to sleep out in the open in this city, and certainly not in this neighborhood.
Good thing we saw all those ads in the paper for singers at the resorts up north.
She huffed a laugh.
I wonder if those resorts will end up being shanty villages.
I already verified one of them, that place in Mackinac City, as legitimate.
Good. I appreciate you checking on it.
More laughter pealed from below as the singer launched into a popular beer hall song.
Let's pray they still have an opening when we get there.
If not, what would they do?
We'll have to hope so.
I'll get my stuff together, Lil, and collect our pay. Then we best try for a bit of shut-eye. Maybe head out at daybreak?
All right.
Clem left her, and Lily hastily assembled her belongings. Soon, she'd finished packing in the stuffy room. She raised her window, which was on the back of the building and right over a stoop. So much for allowing in a little fresh air. The scent of cigars drifted up toward her, and she coughed. She detested the scent of smoke ever since Mama had accidentally burned down their old cabin. Surely it had been an accident, and not deliberate. And how strange that she'd blamed Lily for the incident. Clem called through her door.
Lil, let me in.
She opened the door, and Clem quickly closed it behind him. Her cousin pointed to her carpet bag.
You got your little friends in your case, don't you?
Sure do. I need them and the good Lord helping me, seeing how things are going up here.
She shook her head.
We're going to need Father God most of all in getting us a new spot to play. But even if it all goes bad, my Christie cousins can put us up in the lumber camp and I can work there.
You'd risk your hands working as a lumberjack?
She frowned.
That's what it takes.
He shook his head just a tad, as he used to do when he was bluffing.
But then you might never play piano again.
The way I figure it, we've seen some glorious years. Me playing for the Kentucky Songbird all over the South.
Lily gritted her teeth. Once people realized who her infamous mother was, most of her contracts had disappeared.
We did have a good go of it, didn't we?
Dang right we have.
I pray we've more years to continue our act.
A nearby door opened and then closed. Had others heard their argument with Bly? Clem remained silent until footfalls passed their door and descended the stairs.
Let's get ourselves up to Mackinac City on the morrow. My uncle says there's no place prettier on earth.
Let's pray he's right.
For now, though, let's doze while we can.
He patted his chest pocket.
I went down and got our pay.
Did he say anything?
Nah, just scowled and gave me the money.
She exhaled hard.
We'll need new names for our act.
I reckon so, in case Bly sends out any bad word on us.
Why did things have to be so difficult?
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammakerfiction.com.